This is P.L.O. Lumumba here at the Maasai Lodge in Ongatarongai in Kajiado District in the Rift Valley in the Republic of Kenya. And as we continue to talk about Africa, one can never quite ignore the international dimensions, given that the world is in many ways a global village. The conversation that we are engaged in is to analyze the relationship between Russia and the United States of America and its implications to the world. And of course, in the course of that discussion, we cannot help but also talk about Africa in that scenario, because Africa inescapably becomes very important as the repository not only of human resources, but specifically because of the natural resources that she has under her belly. So whenever we talk about negotiation, we must always have that history at the back of our mind. And when, therefore, the war between Russia and Ukraine started, it must be seen in the context of the collapse of the Soviet Union during the presidency of President Gorbachev. And during that period, we remember that in 1990, with the collapse of the Berlin Wall, one can vividly remember the then Secretary of the United States of America saying in the year 1990 that Russia, which was now emerging from the Soviet Union, should never fear any threat from NATO, because there will be no movement, not an inch extra, towards the East. Those were the words of Secretary of State Baker. But subsequently, we started seeing something that is very interesting from Europe: the continued growth of Europe, particularly the European Union, toward the East, and consuming a number of countries, and I'm using the word consuming very deliberately, and ultimately the expansion of NATO toward the East. And that is where I think Russia said under President Vladimir Putin that really you are reneging on the very undertakings that you made. You are now saying that Georgia will be a part of the European Union and possibly later part of NATO. You are saying that Ukraine will be a part of NATO. You are saying that Latvia and Lithuania, and if possible, even Belarus, will be part of this European expansion. And therefore, you are bringing this threat to our very doorsteps. And it is because of that that there was what one may call the course of war, the casus belli, between Ukraine and Russia. We now know that the war that is being prosecuted in Ukraine mutated. It mutated because the entire Western Europe, as we know it, started supplying Ukraine with arms. And the United States of America, during the administration of Joe Biden, almost said that we will not stop until victory is won. In fact, in the unguarded moments, they were actually admitting that the Ukrainians as a people and Ukraine as a country was merely a theater of war, but what was being fought was Russia, and that the Western world was in it. So that when this war was being prosecuted in that manner, the Europeans were agitating that it must be won in the battlefield. And Europe must always be seen post-World War in the context of the leadership of the United States of America, so that the Europeans may say their bit, but the Americans are at the very head of it, which then brings into play the relationship between the United States of America and Russia. And the Biden administration was a watershed in that relationship, because it became so very toxic. And the toxicity of it can be understood in the context that during initial presidency of Donald Trump, when Donald Trump became the president of the United States of America as the 45th president, there were accusations against Russia that they had been involved and did manipulate in favor of Donald Trump. When the Biden administration came in, you can see that the relationship went south. And when the relationship went south, it did in fact affect the manner in which the war in Ukraine was being dealt with. But, and this is unique in relationships of countries, particularly when countries hold nuclear arsenal, what sometimes has been described as mutually assured destruction as a deterrent. Even during this entire period, we have seen cooperation between Russia and the United States of America in critical areas. In space, the Russian Space Center, if you may, is the meeting point, the melting point of many countries in terms of shared research. In the Arctic region, when research is being undertaken in areas that deal with climate change, the world may never know about it and they may never shout about it. There is collaboration. When there is talk about nuclear armaments and whether the Iranians are developing nuclear armaments for peaceful or for other means, the Russians may appear and may indeed be supporting the Iranians. But there is a backdoor collaboration to ensure that it does not degenerate to levels that are completely unacceptable. We also know that in the medical world, particularly during COVID-19, there may, and in fact, there is suggestion there was collaboration. Collaboration, how do you develop these vaccines, whether you are talking about Moderna or you are talking about Sputnik at that time. So one sees a world which is very interesting, so that if one is a mere or casual observer, they will think that diplomacy is only conducted on the basis of gunboat diplomacy and saber rattling. But yet the reality is that there is subterranean collaboration, which in itself is in itself very important to ensure that the equilibrium is maintained. And it may not be declared, but look at the world now. If you look at the world, the United States of America still wants to consider itself as the international hegemon. So that if you look at our presence in the African continent, such as through the African Command, you'll find their presence in places such as the Seychelles, in places such as Djibouti, until very recently in the Sahel, in Niger, and they have major drone bases in those areas. So that Africa remains a sphere of influence where you not only place your military arsenal, but you also get some of the material that you use to make those very arsenals when you are thinking about the utilization of artificial intelligence in warfare, rare earth, which is to be found in the Democratic Republic of Congo, and lithium, which is to be found in places like Zimbabwe, and uranium, which is to be found in places such as Chad, Niger, and Burkina Faso. And the Russians are also not to be left out. We know that there is the Russian presence in Central African Republic. We know that there is the Russian presence in Sudan. We know that the Russians are playing a role now that the European powers and Americans are reciling out of the Sahelian region. And we know, for example, that even in the security arena, they are beginning to train people in that arena. So the world is very complicated, and the complication of the world is informed by the fact, if one were to now contextualize that complication with regard to the continent of Africa. Why is it that Africa, despite their protestation to the contrary remains an important arena or an important area for the United States of America. Why is it that Russia also has an interest in the continent of Africa? Is a number of reasons. The countries may never say it as loudly as they should, but the reality is that if one is a power militarily and economically, you want to be present in a continent which is the repository of some of the resources that you need. How do you power your industries if you don't have uranium? How do you power your industries in the 21st century when you need tantalum, when you need zinc, when you need coltan, when you need cobalt? You want to be in Niger, you want to be in Chad, you want to be in Nigeria. And that is attractive to both the United States of America and to Russia, as indeed it is attractive to China. And those are the realities that we have to grapple with going forward, which then begs the question. During the short period when one saw a very frosty relationship between the United States of America and Russia during the Biden administration, that is now thawing. No sooner had Donald Trump entered into the White House that we saw there was an immediate rapprochement between the administration in Russia as led by Vladimir Putin and Donald J. Trump in the United States of America. And once again saying, if we are going to stop the war in Ukraine, it will take Russia and the United States of America to midwife this particular process, and it is that process that we are now seeing in motion, which tells us, and this is a very post-World War II scenario, that whenever the world is facing difficulties, somehow it takes the United States of America and Russia, which is the immediate successor of the Soviet Union, to tango in order to bring normalcy to the world. Of course, Europe as a former colonizer will always be in the background, but post-World War II, they have always accepted the leadership of the United States of America in that regard. Russia, of course, has always been a power that speaks for itself, but in the background, one can say, there has always been the tacit support of China, which ideologically is inclined and finds Russia a lot easier to deal with. And this must also be seen as the very basis why you have BRICS, which is a counterweight in a very interesting way to the Bretton Woods institution. And once again, you see that there is that tension that is created by the emergence of BRICS, with Russia on the one side and the United States on the one side. So it is what one may characterize, if one is to be dramatic about it, as a love-hate relationship, but a necessary relationship for purposes of creating the equilibrium that the world needs, particularly when the world is truly still governed by the law of the jungle, survival of the fittest and the dying of the least suitable, and possession of military arsenal does give any country the wherewithal to make certain demands and to be respected, even if reluctantly so. That is what one may say is the tenuous relationship between Russia and the United States of America, and continents such as Africa, which are struggling to find their space, find themselves sometimes in the crossfire and confused as to who to align with. But one hopes and prays that Africa will find her footing and will no longer simply play the gooseberry in this contestation, because it is necessary for peace and tranquility in the world. Ladies and gentlemen, the issues regarding the continent of Africa and our status in the world continue to engage us. But let us say our bye-byes. We'll come back again to continue the conversation. Thank you very much.